Now, without further delay, I'd like to welcome to the stage Chris Satchel, General Manager of the Game Developer Group at Microsoft.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Chris.
So I'd like to start by thanking Jason, not just for his intro, but for his tireless work at the head of the content team that's put GameFest together this year. It was a huge endeavor. We have 11 tracks going on. That represents about 110 hours of content. We have 46 vendors out in the expo hall, and I encourage you, like Jason, to go and talk to these guys. There's some excellent technology on display. We brought 11 groups from across Microsoft together to really give you this sort of insight into our technology and producing games on our platform. But what's really exciting to me is almost a third of our content here at the show is from the ecosystem. It's from outside of Microsoft. And I think that partnering with the ecosystem to sort of give you this information is a really powerful thing that we want to continue. And this is about Microsoft platforms and how we can make successful on them. But I really hope there's things you take away from GameFest that help you no matter what platform you're on. They just help you develop games. And this will be our commitment to the industry to continue to provide this kind of education environment and this forum, as Jason said, for many years to come, to expand it and make it even better than it is today. And they've heard me and other people at Microsoft talk at various events around some of the problems in the industry and some of the challenges we're facing with our rising costs, rising complexity. And also at times we've talked about opportunities. And I think we're in a real position now to realize the opportunity of reviving innovation. It's not that you guys in the audience can't innovate. Often it's you're not given the opportunity to innovate. And I want to talk today about how we can leverage community, how we can give you and the community tools that can help bring that innovation back. And that's what I'm going to outline today is some of the things we're doing at Microsoft and some of the things our partners are doing to help bring this back to the industry. So I think Microsoft can provide a good proxy for a conversation about our industry. We have a broad portfolio of game platforms. We reach a broad demographic of people. And altogether, all told, we have about 100 million people playing on our platforms. Different levels of engagement, different types of games. But it's pretty representative of what's around in the industry today. We're very proud of some of our successes. We're over 5 million users on Xbox 360, over 2 billion hours on Live. There's a great buzz around Microsoft about what we're doing in games, especially with Windows Vista launching next year, which is going to be our most game-friendly operating system ever. We've got gaming front and center. We have a new platform in DirectX 10. And importantly, we're going to revitalize retail with a new retail program, which is going to stop Windows gaming being relegated to the back of the store and bring it front and center. And our efforts in casual gaming are starting to broaden our demographic and reach an older and more female set of consumers. When we look to tomorrow, we're equally excited. We're convinced we're going to be the first console to 10 million in this generation. We're committed to doubling our users that are connected to Live over the next year. We're going to go from 10% penetration of Live on Xbox One to 60% on Xbox 360. We also have great success with marketplace and downloads. We have 40 million downloads. If you have that much of an engaged community, there's new revenue opportunities, both for us and for you, our partners. But all this apparent success really hides a problem that we're experiencing with the industry. Now, on the surface, it looks rosy. So if you look at game revenue in the US, we've taken it from $6.9 billion in 1999 to $10.4 billion 5 years later. That's almost 50% growth in 5 years. That looks really good. But as I said, this masks a problem with our industry. And that's our penetration has not improved. We're taking more money from the same people, and you cannot sustain growth just by taking more money from the same people. You need to expand that penetration and broaden your demographic if you really want to grow the industry in a healthy, successful way. So why is our industry growing this way? Well, I don't think we ever intended it. None of us set out to make this what was going to happen, but we've kind of got a country club mentality that's grown up. There are significant barriers to entry to this industry. There's closed doors, and the first thing we've shut out is developers. We've all seen the problems with attrition in this industry. people that reach the peak of their creative careers and then leave. It's very, very hard making games. We all know that. We experience it. And that hard work is mean people are burning out and they're leaving. And that's talent we cannot afford to lose, because the other problem is our influx of new talent is also being constricted. Computer science is not as attractive to people as it used to be. We're not getting the flow of new people into this industry that we need to sustain our growth and to deliver the kind of experiences our users are demanding. Now you add that to the rising cost of development, and you get a very risk-averse nature in the industry. It's not that we don't want to take risks, that often we're prevented from taking risks. We've all heard of sequelitis, about creating games that are low on innovation, low on risk. And that is leading to the second problem, which is we're kind of shutting out consumers. We're producing very expensive experiences. There's no cheap and easy way to get into games. We've made some inroads with Xbox Live Arcade, but that's just a start, and it's not enough to really broaden that demographic. There's also no way to personalize it. We don't get involved in that creative conversation with our consumers. We kind of talk at them, not with them. There's no way to personalize this game experience. And because of the narrow focus of the industry and a lack of personalization, it can be intimidating. Getting into our country club for users is pretty tough. If all you have are these big experiences, it can be very difficult to get people involved and for them to see the relevance. Now, when you add this together, what you get is you get that popular culture is shut out. We don't have enough choice. You know, think about what you have now, say, the film industry. You have a spectrum. You can go from your home movie to seeing other people's home movies on YouTube. You can go and see indie films. You've got cable. You've got cinematic release. You have DVD. There's a spectrum of choices there. In gaming, our choices are much more narrow. And because of that, it's being less relevant to popular culture. It doesn't get involved in our lives. We don't have the ability for the communities to self-express for the majority. And then there's not great communities that can take their self-expression and share it. Sure, we have communities of engaged gamers, but it's not broad communities. So where does that leave us? Well, let's look at what was happening with a couple of other industries 2 or 3 years ago. They had their own country club mentality. What they did was have a monologue with their audience. And they talked at their audience. So these are the big production companies and films and music. But it got to an inflection point. As soon as the audience had the tools that were readily available, were cheap and easy to use, they started having their own creative conversation. And communities grew up around this. You've seen it with MySpace. You've seen it with YouTube. And what happened is these big production companies reacted to this. They didn't take part in it. They tried to close it down. They tried to put technology solutions in place to prevent these communities. They didn't want to engage with that community creative conversation. They wanted to keep with their monologue, but their monologue had reduced significance. And so these communities started to pass them by. And they see a threat to the business models, and they even hunker down more, and that was a mistake. Now, some people rose above this. Epic Records is a great example of a company that looked at what was happening and said, you know, we should be in MySpace. We will look at the talent out there, we'll promote it, we'll engage in that conversation with our community, and we'll let our community talk to us. And then you start getting feedback, and rather than having this community pass you by, the community is now involved. And one thing we learn from this is that you can support the community, or you can fight it, but it's going to happen whether you like it or not. This community en masse is too intelligent, they're too motivated, they're too open to sharing for you to be able to prevent them. It's going to happen. We realized this in Microsoft over the last few years. You know, it's not something that we had an epiphany about one day. We gradually built up this understanding of what community could mean. And here's a good example. So we had all this information on Live in Xbox One. We had all these leaderboards. We had information about users on them. We thought, well, wouldn't it be good to give developers access to this information? And a great case study for this was Halo 2. Bungie did an amazing job of opening up that information to their community. And you saw websites spring up around this. The user community got involved in that creative discussion. Well, that was one game. So, well, how do you grow that? Well, what we did is we partnered with MSN Spaces. Now you could add these components to your space. Now you could have something tailored around your whole gameplay experience. But then we did get an epiphany. What we realized is that's not enough. You have to give the community tools. If you give the community tools, then proliferation happens. And now we have 50 community developers that are actively engaged producing solutions we never even considered. We have 5 million gamer card hits a day on the web that are nothing to do with us, that are cool pieces of information that people are embedding in their websites and their blogs and other areas. And this proliferation of community is because we opened it up. Now, that's the user community. There's also the developer community. And we made a commitment to you guys in GDC 04 that with this new thing called XNA, we were going to try solve some of these problems. We're going to help the industry. And really what XNA has turned into now is it represents our all-up effort for the game development industry at Microsoft. And there's three big areas that we've been focusing on. The first is tools and technology. This is the core platform and tools that you guys have been building your games on for years. We've been evolving that. There's XNA solutions. This is about how we create end-to-end solutions that solve your business problems. Now, business problems is a very loose term, deliberately. It can mean anything from a 10-year-old creating their first game to you creating a $20 million blockbuster. But it's focused on how do we make you be successful. And then there's the ecosystem. We can't do this by ourselves. We need to partner with technology companies, partner with the ecosystem, build community so that we can be successful. What I want to do is just walk around each of these components to give a little more insight into it. So we'll start with tools and technology. There's three basic components here. You have the base platform. These are our base gaming platforms. This is DirectX. It's the XDK. It's a new technology we introduced at GDC this year with the XNA framework. Then you have XNA components. These are high-level pieces of technology you can build into your games, things like high-level voice, the ZUI runtime, the XNA renderer, the XNA content pipe. Then we have tools. Tools are something we've been increasingly focused on for a number of years. And there's tools you're very familiar with. There's PIX, there's XAC, there's our disk layout, there's emulators. We've done our custom compiler work both for HLSL and for the PowerPC. And then there's new tools, XNA Build, the Advanced Relationship Management System, things that help you solve new production problems. And what we've done over the last 2 years is really try to live up to that commitment with XNA and try to make this simpler and help you solve your problems. You've seen this with us bringing together Xbox and Windows, taking our tools and delivering them on each platform like PIX and XACT, unifying our engagement model with you, bringing technologies like DirectX 10 to Xbox 360. This is all ways we can help simplify your environment and solve some of those problems. Now, we've also been focused on another piece of technology, and we talked about this at E3, and that's Live Anywhere. This is taking, you know, Xbox 360 Live and bringing it to Windows as well, being able to provide new experiences to consumers, new innovation from you by being able to play across platform and deliver experiences across a number of platforms. And I'd just like to take a few minutes to walk you through a vision of what that could look like when we start delivering technology to developers this fall. So it starts on Xbox 360. Familiar site we've seen many, many, many times. And of course, you're on Xbox 360, you do your automatic login. I'm logged in as Avenger today. I've got Shadowrun up. This is nothing new. We've all done this. Now I'm, you know, online in the live community. But what we're going to see is different about this community is it's going to extend beyond the borders of Xbox 360. So bring up the HUD, I go to my message center. And what's different about it is I now have rich presence on other platforms. I can see somebody on a mobile phone. I can see my friends that are on Windows. In this case, for this visualization, we used our good friend Major Nelson. He is allegedly working. And what we can do, just as easily as we can invite an Xbox 360 user to come and play with us, we can do that for a Windows user. So I'm going to go in and invite Major Nelson to come and play Shadowrun with me. I can see his gamer card just as I could on Xbox. One click, he's got the invite. Now what we'll do is swap over to see what would happen on the Vista desktop. So here we see Major Nelson's desktop. He's in Outlook, so we can disturb him from that. We have the Windows sidebar on the right-hand side. And we have a widget there, which is basically your unified friends list. So we have unified friends information from across platforms and rich presence information to match. So the same thing we had on Xbox, we now have through on Vista. And below the friends information, we can see the gamer card. This is a unified identity, just like you would have on Xbox. So now, you don't have to separate your identity based on the platform you're playing on. And what you'll see in a moment is an invite pops up. Now, what we can do with the invite is make use of the extra real estate you'd have on a Windows desktop and give more information in it. And again, using that extra real estate, I can go and compare our achievements. I've got some achievements on Xbox 360, some on Windows. I can go and compare them, see if I want to accept the invite, and when I'm ready, a simple click, no messing around with servers or IP addresses or anything else, we're into the game. So I'm going to go down, I'm going to accept this invite, and now we're playing across platform. You'll be able to do voice chat, text chat. We could both be using a common controller. Could be using mouse and keyboard on Windows and the controller on 360. What it enables us to do is now enable that cross-platform experience. But this is only one platform, and our Live Anywhere vision extends beyond that. So let's think about what happens on a mobile phone. Well, you don't really want to play that same kind of head-to-head experience, but there's other things we could do. So let's look at our message center. Major Nelson sent us a message that has an attachment. Instead of being text or voice, he's actually sent me a car from Forza. And what a perfect thing to do on my cell phone is to engage in car tuning. It's really easy to do with a simple interface. I can tune it on my cell phone. I can save it to Live and be ready to use that car later. Now, that's the car tuned, but as you all know if you play Forza 1, a huge part of that experience is building new liveries, painting your car, getting it ready to race, personalizing it. Well, I'd hate to try to do that on a cell phone. It's not the right experience for that device, but Windows is. You have a mouse, you have a keyboard, you have storage, you have a high-resolution display. So on Windows, I can go in, I can personalize my car, and I can make it look exactly how I want, ready to play later. And maybe later we play on Windows, maybe play on 360, maybe play together. But the concept is I've now done something on a cell phone, something on Windows, and later on when I go home, I can now play on my Xbox. So I've tuned it on a cell phone, I've edited the livery on Windows, I'm playing online. Now this isn't a Forza 2 feature example, this is just an idea of what the team could do if they had this technology. So let's talk about the next part, XNA Solutions. XNA Solutions is where we bring together services, education, and production tools so that we can solve an end-to-end problem for you, or for other areas of the ecosystem. Now the first part is services. Services is all around the things that you use from us every day that helps you deliver a great game experience. Developer support, engineering support, certification, game compatibility, developer relations. These are all things that we try to do for the industry to help you be successful. The next part is really important to us at Microsoft. Education. XNA Education is all about this event. It's about GameFest. It's about white papers and samples. Trying to help you be successful on our platforms through education. Helping you be successful no matter what you're doing in game development. And the last is a new thing we're doing, which is XNA Production. This is about giving an end-to-end solution, a package that you can use for a particular scenario. Talk more about that in a few minutes. Now, these solutions aren't just for AAA development. That is important. That's what a lot of people in this room are engaged in, doing amazing game experiences. It's not just about the $20 million game. It's about three guys in university who think they can change the world. And in fact, it was three such guys that did change our world and started this industry. I'd like to bring to the stage Scott Henson, our Director of Platform Strategy, to talk about these three guys, their story, and show how that's inspired our later work. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thanks, Chris. So I'm going to ask you guys a quick question. So, first of all, does anyone know what the first computer video game was? Any thoughts on that? What was it? Tennis for Two. Good guess. Any other guesses? Space War. Great guess, and thank you for that setup. All right, so we're going to do a little bit of history. I know it's early in the morning for a history class. And I'm going to kind of walk you through what I believe to be, Tennis for Two is a good example, but the true origin of video games, which is Space War. So 45 years ago at MIT, we had a little gift from DEC dropped on the doorstep of MIT, this little $150,000 beauty. And the PDP-1, which I think came with 8 or 12K of RAM, and a mighty processor to land us on the moon, or some other great feat. But in fact, what it did was it spurred on a conversation about how do we get the most out of this. These three guys brainstormed Space War, and it looks like they also started the gamertag revolution there with Shag and Slug. Here's Slug, and he got his nickname because he was a little slow to start. It took one of his friends to actually go to DEC and get some of the math routines to get this thing kick-started. He started in December of 1961, and after a little bit, he had the first incarnation that you see here of Space War up and running. The exciting thing about Space War, and it really leads into a lot of what we're talking about, is the pylon effect. Look at all the different people that contributed to it. I mean, this game had lots of contributors from the engineering schools, and of course it became like prevalent on the PDP-1 and was installed everywhere, and had a massive influence on people. In fact, such a big influence, it even started things such as joysticks. So this is one of the early shots of the joystick that was used after they went from levers and switches, and this is a little illustration that they used. And of course, things have evolved since then. Now, as time went on and this ripped through the universities, about a decade later, the arcade revolution began that was inspired by Space War. The first of these was actually at Stanford. Two guys left school. They took a modified PDP 1011, and they built a $20,000 arcade that was fed by dimes. So I don't know if they ever got a cost recovery on this, but you kind of get the idea. Now, another guy that was inspired, I think you guys might recognize him, Nolan Bushnell was also inspired by this, and he created the first commercial stand-up arcade, which is Computer Space. Now, this is a modified version of Space War. They made 1,500 of these and sold 500, and I think Nolan probably got a little frustrated. You see here, this is the two-person version. Went off to kind of start his own thing outside of Nutting Associates, and I think we all kind of know the his own thing story. The early part of that story that's really interesting is, you know, their little test app that they wrote, Pong, actually became a huge sensation in the early 70s. And I think you can kind of continue to extrapolate this story. Certainly this device here had a huge impact on me as a kid when it came into my home, and I'm sure millions of other folks. But not nearly as big of an impact as the next thing that we're going to see here, which is, you know, I think a lot of us grew up on the Atari 2600, and I think this really kicked off the video game revolution. And of course, the story wouldn't be complete without a 1978 edition box shot of Space War. So since this is such, you know, I think a great, rich story, talks about those three guys in the dormitory that you're talking about, Chris, it was really inspiration for us. Now, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Chris has been on vacation for the last week. And while he was gone, we've been busy at work, you know, working on demos and seeing what we could put together. So now he's coming back. We're showing for the first time some of the early work that we've got up and running on this technology around the XNA framework that we talked about in March. So I'm going to bring that up here on this PC. And 45 years later, we can show you the technical marvel of the XNA framework at work. So this is three guys over 3 weeks that got this up and running. I'm going to start this. You'll see, yeah, they added gravity. They added the star right in the middle.
So let me just get this right. So I go to Mexico, and you have three guys working on this, and you've managed to create, with 45 years of technology, Space War, with the biggest star.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, but we did it in less time.
Is there anything else? I mean, is it Space War with a big star?
I can shoot you.
And that's it.
No, wait, come on now. Give us a little credit. You know, we've been busy at work. There's Rumble.
So we have Space War, a big star, and Rumble.
Yeah.
Come on.
There's sound. We added sound.
So hang on. I just want to pause. Just want to check. We have Space War, we have a big star, we have Rumble, and Beep.
You pause, and I'm going to just keep shooting. That's right. We've got that. Exactly. Exactly. But remember, Chris, it was done in a really short period of time. So, I mean, give us a little bit of credit here. Give me a lot of credit, because I'm whipping your tail here. All right. So enough fooling around here. We actually, a little more serious, if you guys have played Geometry Wars, you know there's a little inspiration called Retro and Evolved. Let's show you what the team really did in 3 weeks, and we'll move into the Evolved version. So the idea behind this, and we actually have a session on it, is to create a fully realized game that people can play around with, see how it was done, see how it was put together, and show some of the capabilities of the system. And you'll see three guys in 3 weeks can actually do some pretty fun stuff here. Hopefully I'll... It's hard to talk and kill you at the same time. All right, I need a little motivation here. you see one or the other. Uh-oh, time's running out, buddy.
By the way, if anybody knows how we work at Microsoft, every year we have this idea of review scores. The more Scott beats me by, the lower his review score
yeah,
gets.
Yeah, so technically Chris is my boss. So, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Well, choose your weapon. You'll notice another little addition that we added to Space War here that was inspired by a game you might all know and love out there in the community. And I'll pick my weapon, you pick yours, and let's get it on. So now we've added. Now, we also have hyperspace. For those that know about Space War, you know that hyperspace was one of those little, yeah, exactly.
Hey, no cheating by actually using the controls.
There you go. And there's all kinds of fun weapons in here. And like I said, there's a really cool session that kind of dives into the creation of this, shows how it was put together in just a few short weeks. So you might be wondering, hey, that's great, Windows.
When do we get?
Did you get any other work done while I was on vacation?
Well, this is great. And I know that you're using the debug alpha framework here, but what about our other platform?
All right, let's go check out the console. So while you were gone, I know when you left we didn't have this running, but this is your little gift for coming back. We got in the last few days, we got up and running on an Xbox 360 dev kit, which we'll switch over to here in just a second. In 3 days, we took the code that was running on Windows and got it up and running on the Xbox 360 system. Which here it is. And just to prove it, we'll show you guys. Of course, we have to do it on the monitors you guys are looking at, so that's going to be a huge disadvantage for my boss. But you can see pretty much the same game, high code reuse. I mean, we're hoping it's close, and a very short game at that, just to prove that it actually works. But there you have it, running on Windows, running on Xbox 360 with some of the early bits. And this is early time, so we know that things are only going to pick up from here.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, Scott.
Absolutely.
So, that's great. That's an example of the framework, and sure, it's an early framework, but what do we do to make it into a full product? And what I'm pleased to announce, as you can see here on the screen, is XNA Game Studio Professional. This is what we're going to do when we evolve that early framework that's being used for these demonstrations into a commercial platform to deliver games on. This is a solution you can use to do arcade games, and certainly at first, it is tailored to that casual arcade experience. But we believe over time, it's going to become a prototyping tool for AAA developers, and eventually, a platform for AAA developers that gives them a choice. You can choose native code, which is a lot of our development at the moment, or move to an environment that has a different paradigm. And that's what XNA Game Studio Professional is. It's based on Visual Studio 2005, and it really brings C# and the .NET 2.0 framework to game development. Built on top of that framework is the XNA cross-platform framework. This is an easier, simpler way to create games and to get ideas up and running as fast as possible. It also allows easy deployment across our platforms. At the moment, we're focusing on Xbox and Windows, but we envisage adding more platforms to that with very, very high levels of code reuse if you write to the cross-platform framework. We're aiming for 95% is an aspirational level for where we want to get code reuse to, so that we can leverage the investment that you guys put into game development as effectively as possible. And you think that's important. If you're an indie developer, you obviously want that. You want to build your game once and be able to deploy it across multiple platforms. Well, that's great for professional developers. But what about that country club I was talking about breaking down those doors? What about the three guys at university? Hell, what about the three guys at high school that want to build a game? How do we reach out to those people? How do we take somebody from their first game development experience all the way through to professional game development experience, if that's where they want to go? Well, I'm pleased to announce, for the first time in 30 years of console development, we're going to open up the retail console and allow people, all people, to build, test, play, and share games on a retail Xbox 360. So I'm very pleased to announce XNA Game Studio Express. Now, XNA Game Studio Express will be in beta on the 30th of August. 30th of August, you'll be able to go and you'll be able to take this and use this great tool on Windows. So at that point, you'll have a great development environment solution for Windows. And then for the holiday this year, we're going to release the full version, which will give you the ability, if you join what we're calling the Creators Club, which is a $99 subscription a year, to develop these games on Xbox 360. Now, the cool thing for us is this uses the same technology as Professional. So as you build your games on Windows, and then you go to 360, you're going to be able to reuse that knowledge. You'll be able to reuse a huge amount of your code and just get a concept very easy from one platform to another. As you want to go from, if you're, say, a student or enthusiast, or an independent developer that just wants to try this for the first time, as you want to move up to a professionally released game, we have an easy solution and path for you from XNA Game Studio Express to XNA Game Studio Professional. Now, mention the Creators Club. Get a couple of things with Creators Club. One, you get the ability to do all this on Xbox 360 on a retail console, unmodified. You also get great content. We realize that just giving you great technology isn't enough for people. What we need to do is enable people with content they can use, things that allow them to ramp up easily. And we're going to be giving away games, the source code, the assets to help people really ramp up quickly. And that's going to make the Creators Club a very vibrant place. In fact, our vision is there is so much value in the Creators Club that even if you just wanted to do this on Windows, which will be absolutely free, you'd still want to join just to get that content. So if you've been to these events, you've probably heard me talk before about my history in games and where I started. And I just remember when I was like 10, 11, there was real excitement in the industry. We really had this thinking, God, if I just try hard, if I get better at my craft, hey, I can publish a game. Maybe it's on a magazine cover. Maybe it's with a publisher. Although probably at 10 or 11, I didn't really understand what a publisher was. But you had that dream of being able to get your game out. And in some ways, we kind of lost that dream in this industry. It hasn't completely died, but it's not where it should be. And I think with Game Studio Express and Creators Club, we're going to be able to bring that dream back. And imagine what I could have done if I'd had this. I could have gone up to Windows. I could have gone to our website. I could have got a great development tool. I could then be building my games, be testing them. Once I finally convinced my parents to buy me an Xbox 360, I could then go to Marketplace, and just with my Silver account, I could join the Creators Club after I convinced them to join me in the Creators Club, and I can now be making games with my friends on Xbox 360. If we're really good, we have the dream we could get a publisher interested. I could just send them my files. They can just play it on Windows. They could play it on Xbox 360. Well, then if they like it, and they say, hey, well, how do we make this into a professional game? I've now got an easy way to do that. I get professional. I now have everything I need to make a professionally released game. I have that pathway. Everything from my first game experience up to my professional experience, I can stop anywhere I want. But there's that path and there's a dream there, and I think that's really important for our industry. So on to the last element of XNA. The XNA ecosystem. You know, we've talked so far very much about what we're doing, what we're going to produce, and what we're going to give the industry, but we can't do it alone. We need strong partnerships. And this comes in sort of three forms. The first part is XNA community. Now, you've seen us start this idea with Xbox Central, with our MVP program. We've talked about it today with our Creator Club. We realize over time we have to expand these efforts and really focus on creating vibrant development communities for the different aspects of the ecosystem, whether it's professional developers like yourselves or whether it's students and enthusiasts. We also need strong partnerships. There's some great partners we have that produce excellent technology. There's 46 of them, including test vendors, people that help you get your game through cert, out in that expo hall. I encourage you again to go look at their work. They're a great part of our partnership. We need to keep supporting them and keep helping them build solutions that, on top of our platforms that can help you be successful. I'd also like to take this opportunity to highlight another partnership that we've been very invested in as we're producing XNA Game Studio Express, which is with Autodesk. We were really looking for a file format that we could plug onto our content pipeline that would allow as many people as possible to have tools that could get data into our system. And we found FBX was an excellent format for this. I think it has great flexibility and a very rich specification system. And we're pleased to be partnering with Autodesk to make that the format of choice for getting content into XNA. On the back of that, we're putting a new content pipeline that really makes it easy for people to sort of go through that process of getting creative content in a standard format into their game and using it rather than having to deal with all the intricacies of managing memory buffers and every other thing we have to do to get an item into our game. You can still do all that stuff, but this is an easy way to do it. And then the last part is the academic community. This is vital for our goals. You'll have heard Bill talk about this recently, about when he leaves Microsoft, one of the things he wants to do is spend a lot of time trying to increase the interest in academia, in science, help get people interested in it again. Interested in computer science. I mean, you may not know in this room, but the admissions for computer science programs has been falling in many countries quite steeply in the last few years. We're seeing almost a 30% year-on-year decline in some countries. And that's a problem for us. That's going to squeeze our talent pipe. We're not going to get so many people through the system that can take part in our industry if people just give up on computer science and science in general when they're, you know, 10 or when they're 13 or when they're 16. We need to get people through this system. And our alliance with academia is really going to be focused on this. And one of the things that was interesting was a couple of really good anecdotes we had. One was from a university that was running summer courses for younger children to get them interested in programming. And of course, they chose game development. And one of the things that struck us, it was amazing, is in that 10, 11 age group, the demographics on who's interested are completely different. There's 30% of that demographic was female. And then what they found was even more impressive is if you got them interested with something they found relevant, which was game development, they would stay engaged, not see the precipitous drop you get from that age onwards where it just becomes predominantly 95% or more male. So that's really exciting. What's also really exciting is how quickly you can get these admissions filled up if you offer game development, something that makes all the science and the great aspects of the course come alive for people. And game development is something that can do that. And we've had anecdotal stories of admissions filling up within 24 hours as soon as game development is added to the curriculum. It has to be backed up with excellent education, but it shows that we can leverage things that we're doing in this industry to really help that pipe of talent and that pipe of fresh ideas take part in our ecosystem. Staying with the academic theme, something I'd like to announce is we have a partnership already with 10 excellent universities who are committed to using XNA in their courses within the next year. And in fact, the University of Western Ontario is committed to using us as early as this fall. So they're going to use our beta system to start incorporating XNA into their courses. I would also like to highlight USC and their excellent work with GamePipe and their partnership with EA. We really applaud this. We think this is a great way to get new talent into the industry, and we're super excited that they're excited about the XNA technology and want to make it part of their course. Now, we talked about partnerships. The other partnership that we've been really focused on since GDC is with Garage Games. We talked to these guys at GDC, and once they stopped laughing at us about managed code, they realized that we were really on the same wavelength. Garage Games has done an amazing job about bringing game development to the masses. They have the biggest online game development community. It's almost 70,000 people. They have over 10,000 licenses of their tools and technology. There are many academic institutions. And what we found as we talked to them, that our vision of democratizing game development was completely shared. And then what was great for us is Garage Games got very excited about our technology, and we're looking at how we could partner to provide even more solutions to independent studios, to students, to hobbyists. So I'd like to bring up Mark Frohmeyer, who's the president of Garage Games, to talk about their technologies. Welcome, Mark.
Chris, thanks for having me. How are you? So I thought I'd take a few minutes just to talk about Garage Games and sort of how we came about, then move on to show some of our technology products and then talk a little bit more about some of the really cool stuff we're doing with the XNA team. So why does Garage Games exist? Well, my partners and I all came from the commercial game development industry. We were working at Dynamics, and we noticed a lot of the same trends that Chris was talking about earlier. Bigger teams, bigger budgets, high level of stress. And, you know, the bottom line, for us, it just wasn't fun anymore. We were seeing publishers being less willing to take on risky new innovative game concepts. And we thought, well, what does the game industry need? We looked at music, we looked at movies, and we said, well, maybe if there's an independent movement in games, that would spur a new growth of creativity in games, and it would bring back fun for us as game developers. So we were all technologists, came from a strong technology background, and we thought, what can we do to facilitate this whole concept? And we thought, well, you know, there are a number of excellent technology platforms that serve the AAA game space. But if a musician has to pay $500,000 for a guitar, the odds of a growth of an independent music movement are basically zero. So we thought, well, rather than focusing on that AAA game space, that we would focus on bringing tools and technology that everyone who had a passion for games could afford and use. In August of 2001, we shipped the original Torque game engine, and next September, in a month, we're going to ship Torque Shader Engine, which is our next-generation graphics technology. This is a little demo reel. We tried to make TSE fully buzzword compliant with all of the next-generation hardware features, so it has full shader effects, bloom, glow, an advanced material system. This is showing off some of our character animations, which do skinned bone animations and layered animations as well. So we also added a brand new terrain engine to TSE, which we call Atlas. And Atlas is a GPU-efficient, chunked LOD terrain system that's capable of rendering enormous terrain and water scenes. It can page texture data from disk and terrain data from disk. You can see in the demo, it's the visible range is something like 3 miles, and the terrain size is enormous in this particular demo. Also, the shader engine leverages the core strengths of Torque in networking and built-in scripting and tools. So even though we haven't actually hit 1.0 on the shader engine yet, we've already shipped 4 games using the technology, the best well-known of which is Marble Blast Ultra, which shipped this last January on the 360 Live Arcade and has gone on to be one of the top revenue earners on the platform. So even though we're still not quite out of the early adopter phase, it's still usable for building games today. So what we realize is that even though the Torque Shader Engine is a very powerful 3D engine technology, it wasn't enough really to fulfill the full mission of bringing independent gaming to the masses, because especially for people who are just starting out on the road of game development, diving into 350,000 lines of C++ code and networking and physics and character animation and so on was just a lot to get into. It was a fairly overwhelming adventure for a 13-year-old kid. So, plus we looked at the casual games market, at the success of the retro 2D games on Live Arcade, and we realized that there are a bunch of game mechanics and a bunch of new innovations in game mechanics that don't even require the 3D space at all. So what we decided to do was to take our 3D engine and actually build a complementary set of 2D game engine technologies on it. I'm going to bring Adam Larson up on the stage. He's one of our engineers who helped build Torque Game Builder, which we shipped this last June. And Torque Game Builder is a full 2D game creation technology. So he's going to wire it up while I talk about it. Basically, it supports sprites, 2D particle system. It supports tile maps, image maps. It can do multiple layered effects. It has a full swept geometry collision engine for doing 2D collisions, as well as a 2D rigid body physics system. It also has Torque's GUI system and a turn-based networking setup. So it's an easy-to-use 2D tool and 2D engine technology that makes building games a snap, literally. Now, what Adam is building on the screen here is one of the sample games that comes with Torque Game Builder called Tank Buster. And you can see him creating the multiple background layers for parallax scrolling, dropping characters and enemies onto the play field. And then it's as simple as just hitting the play button to test out the user's creation. Now, in the interest of time, there were a couple of things we had to pre-script. One of them was the character firing. And the other was the tank enemies that are shooting the bullets. But that's really about it. So as far as rapid prototyping and development of 2D games, it's a huge win for people making both beginners getting set out and people building 2D casual games. It's suitable for everything from card games, board games, adventure games, and so on. So you might be wondering, let's see, what exactly this has to do with XNA. Well, we're going to bring up that same demo one more time, and this time this is running on a new engine we've been developing internally at Garage Games. We call Torque X. So over the course of the last year, we've ported key elements of the Torque technology platforms to XNA on C#. And I'll be honest, and Chris actually mentioned this earlier, when these guys came to us and they said, what do you guys think about a full engine written in managed code on 360, I was pretty skeptical. And I come from I've been programming for years to the metal C++ and assembly language, and so I had a fair degree of doubt that we'd be able to create an engine that would have next generation capabilities and still have enough horsepower on the managed platform to run game logic, physics, character animation, and so on. So with that in mind, there's one more thing I want to show you. This is a build of Marble Blast Ultra running on Torque X on the XNA platform. So it's got shader-based rendering, dynamic cubic environment mapping on the actor, continuous time physics, swept polygon collision against a polysuit model with 20,000 triangles. There's actually not even any LOD currently on the level mesh. And it's all running on C# managed code. There's not a single line of C++ code in the entire mix. And the performance that we're getting out of it is within striking distance of what we get in the native game. And this is before we've actually really even done a lot of performance tuning on Torque X, and before the XNA team has had a chance to do a lot of performance tuning on the XNA code. So I was just blown away by the performance that we got. And even the hardcore C++ programmer in me was amazed when our guys got it up and running in 3 man weeks on the new framework. So they ported over all the gameplay logic, collision and physics in 3 weeks onto XNA. The bottom line was that coding against the managed version was faster, it was easier, and it was actually more fun for our developers than coding to native C++. So, it left me realizing that XNA, the managed code, it's the real deal. It's totally capable of doing 2D games and 3D games using next-generation hardware. Our experience has been that it's going to be a huge win, and not just for rapid prototyping, but for full game development. So, that's all great for commercial game guys, but I think back to, when I was 15 years old, and if I'd had access to a platform and to engine technology that would let me build games on my PC and then play them in my living room against my friends, it would have been a dream come true. And for independent game developers today who can actually get real console game development experience on a box they buy at retail, it's huge. So our plan going forward is to have all of our next-gen technology, that is all the stuff you saw earlier that we have currently running on the Torque Shader Engine, lighting, terrain, and so on, to bring all of that over to Torque X on XNA. So when XNA ships, XNA Game Studio Express ships this fall, we're going to ship a corresponding game engine that will take it that much more of a level of ease of use for game developers. It'll be compatible with the Torque Game Builder, and it's going to be available when Game Studio ships. So I really believe there's never been a more exciting time to be involved in game development, and we're just really excited to be here today. So thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thanks, Chris.
One of the things that we're super excited about with our partnership with Garage Games is although XNA, Game Studio Express, really raises the paradigm in which you can develop games, you know, things that used to take hundreds of lines of code, now with the framework have collapsed down to just a few lines, there's a really valuable space on top of what we're providing that Garage Games is fulfilling. You know, imagine being 10 years old and being able to get into game development with like drag and drop game building using Torque Game Builder, and then have a pathway of tools that take you up to the professional level in 3D development. In fact, it's a fun story from dinner last night. We were demoing this to some members of the press that were kind enough to join us. And afterwards, one of our PR executives was looking at it saying, "Do you know what? You talked about it before, but man, we never really understood what you were talking about. And when we saw it last night, it just hit me. I can make a game. You're going to see the first game from PR ever." And you know, that's cool. I mean, seeing that excitement is awesome. The other thing that really hit me with this is when we went to visit Garage Games a few months ago, they've got a 2D game up and running, a very simple game, and they were showing off Torque Game Builder. One of their artists, Timothy Asti, had stayed late that night to add some new art to it. It was actually adding normal mapping on some of the terrain. And Timothy is not a programmer. He's a dyed-in-the-wool artist and was sort of experimenting, got excited by it, and spent a few more hours. And none of us really saw this till the next morning, and so we came in. He's like, "Hey, do you want to see something else I did?" And it blew us away. Like, just overnight, with a few hours, somebody with no programming experience has completely changed the game. It didn't look the same. It didn't feel the same. It was a completely different environment, and it was absolutely awesome. And you can go see this game at the Garage Game stand, and they can show you the transition from one game to the next that the artist did overnight. And that's the kind of fast innovation that I think the partnership with XNA and XNA Game Studio Express with the Garage Games toolset can bring to the industry, and we're super excited. So back to that country club. I think when you have these partnerships and you have these technologies and you do the right thing with the community, what we can do is turn the country club into the community club. We can open up those doors and change where we're heading as an industry. The first is, let's make all developers welcome. Now, you've all worked really hard to get where you are. We should have more people and lower that bar to get into our club and into our industry. Now, we've started that by opening up the console, giving people the right tools to really be able to create. And having those tools available and having them approachable is really that inflection point. That was the inflection point for music and for films, and we're at that point with games. And I think if we ride that inflection point and we partner with the community, we get innovation back into the industry. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of people in this room that have a great idea, and they don't have the skill to produce it. You just don't get the time. I mean, you guys have a lot of long hours, and having tools that could help you just play out your ideas early and just mess around, I think will help spur innovation back into your core products and create some brand new products, you know, like we did, like happened with Geometry Wars in the meantime. If you do that, we can engage the consumer and give them choice. Now we can have that whole spectrum from the game I just create to impress my parents or my friends, to the game I share with the creator community, to games I share more broadly than that, to live arcade, to 360 games, to high-end Windows games, to MMORPGs. There is a choice of options for consumers. They can also personalize and get involved in that creative conversation. And because it's such a broad audience, there's so many different ideas out there, it's more inviting. It can be the three-minute game that their friends gave them to play. Something that's really easy and simple that gets them into our ecosystem and gets that delight of gaming to them. And if we add this together, what you end up with is games driving popular culture. You have everyday relevance. Every day I get links to YouTube. There's something on that that's kind of relevant to me, or depending on who sent me the link, irrelevant to me. But it's part of my everyday work life. If you have that with games, you have all these ideas out there, you're going to get everyday relevance. When you get that, you start driving popular culture. Then you have a way to self-express. There's a way, as a user, to engage in that creative conversation with the industry. There's community, and strong community, for a broad base of people, and they can self-express and decide what they want to talk about within that community. So you add this together, and really I think where we're at is we're at that country club inflection point in our industry. We kind of have a choice. We can keep the monologue going. We can, as producers, just talk to our consumers in one direction. We can hope that our business models remain unchanged and nothing is modified in our industry. We can hope that, hey, we survive this talent pipe squeeze. We somehow get complexity worked out, and that will help the industry grow beyond that 36% penetration. Well, what we can do is partner with the community and support them. Bring together, from our side, tools like XNA Game Studio Express. Bring together the great tools from Garage Games. Great technologies from our partners out in that exhibition hall. From the industry, we can help partner with that community, give them a creative voice, and make it an us situation. And rather than that conversation, that creative conversation passing us by, we're engaged in it. And then the last part of our vision, as you expand this out, think about this. Imagine a community-powered arcade. Think about YouTube for games, MySpace for games. These engaged creators having that conversation with a broad audience, allowing anybody to play their games. You know, having those tools to be able to have a rich experience of being able to find content that's relevant, organize, self-organize and tag into communities that are relevant. At that point, you're going to get a virtuous cycle. You're going to have broader games, more people in our ecosystem, more relevance. We're going to get beyond that 36%. We're going to start getting more penetration, more people involved in this industry. We're going to also get a better pipeline into this industry. New creative ideas, new types of people, more people. The people we need to fuel our growth. But it's not going to happen with just us. We're excited about this. We have partners that are excited about this. If I had a call to action here, it'd be, I want you guys to get excited about it as well. This doesn't replace what you're doing. You know, I still have my unhealthy DVD obsession. That doesn't stop me going to the theater. Doesn't stop me being interested in YouTube. This is the same thing. We can get a vibrant ecosystem and have more people in it, grow it for everyone, for AAA games, right down to that 10-year-old producing their first game. And I really think that by engaging with the community, we're going to not have the same kind of disastrous effect that happened to films and music. We're trying to desperately control this and it passing us by. We can engage right now and make us part of that evolving community. So thank you very much for your attention. I really hope you enjoyed the rest of GameFest. There's a lot of content here. Thank you for joining us today.